BitTitan updates the MSP Complete Automation platform. HP releases 54 multifunction printers. Autotask has a new backup solution partner program. 2-minute drills, 60-second gurus, and more. It's all coming up. Channel Pro Weekly, episode 39. Excuse me, HP. Hello and welcome to Channel Pro Weekly, episode 39. I am your somewhat healthier host, Matt Whitlock, technology editor and online guy here at the Channel Pro HQ. Joining me is our panel of co-hosts each and every week, the lovely, the talented, the one who will kill me eventually as long as I get my copy to her on time Monday, Cecilia Galvin.
Hello!
And our other co-host, senior news editor, and the guy with... I gotta plan out these little things ahead of time, because I like, oh, I'm going to say something funny, and then like I was like, you know, it's the guy who's got the nose and the cheek and the chin, you know what I'm saying?
There is nothing funny about Rich Freeman.
The guy with no sense of humor, apparently. Rich Freeman.
Hey there.
So how are you guys this week?
Doing well.
Yeah, I would say I'm having a rush of several good days. So,
hey, that's what I like to hear. Good days.
Yeah, good days.
For those worried about my my health, you will know that I'm about 95% of the way recovered from this nasty cold I've had. Still a little hoarse and still having some sinus fun, but. But all in all, I feel okay, though. That's what matters.
Definitely sound better.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was trying to count how many times I blew my nose during the last show, and I'm surprised I even got a word in otherwise. So thank goodness for the mute button. That's all I got to say. Anyway, so Cecilia, what you working on this week? Anything?
This week is... trying to think of what issue I'm working on. May. I'm working on the May issue of Channel Pro and trying to pull all the little missing pieces together. And then next week, it's the event guide for our upcoming Channel Pro SMB Forum in Chicago area on May 2nd.
Yeah, pulling all the pieces together is code for Matt still hasn't gotten me his copy. I know how to read between the lines here.
Guess what, Matt? Rich hasn't gotten his either.
Yeah.
So I'm not the only one this time. Well, I'm going to try to get it to you. I'm not going to say try. I will. There is no try. There is only do. I will get it to you by Monday.
That's right, Yoda.
So what about you, Rich? What are you doing?
Well, I am working on. So I'm working on this article I owe Cecilia. So we've got our annual visionaries list coming up, and we're working away as well on some other special features for upcoming issues, the Reader's Choice Awards. So a lot of preparation for some of our special features here at Channel Pro.
Very cool. Very cool. I am. I'm on the home stretch here of getting our new event system in place. So one of the big projects that I've been working on is taking all of these different weird services that we use to manage and like get people registered for our shows and get them all built into one cool solution. And I am on the home stretch of that. I'm very excited. So anybody who's registered for our events knows that it wasn't always super hard to do, but a little disjointed, especially on the management side of that. So we are trying to make it super easy and super friendly for all of our attendees to get registered and attend our events, like the one in Chicago on May 2nd, which if you're in the Chicago area, we are, what's in Rosemont, I believe, right, Cecilia?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
right
so,
by the airport.
Yeah, right by O'Hare. It's not hard to get to. So if you're downtown or if you're anywhere in the, you know, in the Northwest area or even West Side, you know, Aurora, you know, just hop on 290 or 90. You know, this is my neck of the woods. It's real easy to get to. So if you're in the area, there's no excuse not to go. We're going to have a lot of fun. You're going to learn a lot. We got a great, great panel of people talking. And I don't, Cecilia, you want to give a quick little plug on some of the things people will learn?
Oh, sure. One of the things that I don't think a lot of channel pros think about is, or maybe they do, it depends on how old they are, I think, but they don't really think too much about how much their company is worth. And we've got a really cool session where we have a lot of really experts in this area who help people understand how to figure out what their company is worth, not just you know, to know, but kind of to plan down the road for when they will want to get out of the business, retire, whatever. And that's something that you shouldn't miss. It's something you should know because you do have to plan for it. It just doesn't happen automatically. Someone can't say, here's the magic bullet, go home, do it now, and then, you know, next week you can sell your company. This kind of stuff takes a little time. So that's one.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, so two things there, right? It's like you're absolutely right. People don't think far enough ahead in terms of, you know, what they're going to be able to get for their business. And to the extent that they do think about what their business is worth, one of the things we learned in preparing the content for this session is they very often get it wrong. It's not about revenue, folks. So, yeah, and the people on our panel are all, you know, deep into M&A activity for managed service providers and so on. So they really know how to calculate valuation, what you can kind of do now to drive it up. So, yeah, good session.
So, yeah, good. So that and a lot more. If you're interested in going, go to events.channelpronetwork.com or our main website, channelpronetwork.com. Hit the events link, and there you will find more information and everything you need to know to get yourself registered. May 2nd, Chicago area, wherever you're at, Aurora, Naperville, Rockford, downtown Chicago, Palatine, what doesn't matter where. Make sure you get there. It's gonna be a good show. All right. I have one other little bit of news. So we are trying to be much more active on the social channels, and we are about to hit a milestone. So I want to see if I can get our listeners to help us get over the hump. We are nearing the 1,000 mark for likes on Facebook.
Yay! Woohoo!
So we're sitting there right around 980 something the last time I checked. So if you're listening to the show, go and seek us out on Facebook, Channel Pro Network on Facebook, and give our page a like and help us get over that 1,000 like milestone. It'll be a big deal. Hopefully next week we can report that we're over the hump and we're excited. So make sure, and you should like our page anyway, because we're doing stuff there. You can find information.
Because we're awesome.
Links to new stories and all that kind of stuff. So a lot's happening in the social stratosphere with Channel Pro. All right. So with that, why don't we dive into some of the news?
Yeah.
So Rich, first story I see up here is one on BitTitan. They got some stuff going on. What's going on there?
Well, they have, just this week, they have released a major new update to their MSP Complete solution, which debuted, I think, late in 2015, if I remember right. They've updated it, obviously, since then. But this new release, just out now, really builds in a lot of very interesting functionality. The whole concept behind MSP Complete is that it's going to help you automate work processes that you perform every day if you're a managed service provider. And obviously, the more you can automate, the more efficiently you're going to operate, the more profitable you're going to be. And they've really kind of gone to town on the automation theme in this release. So the system now is kind of built around what they're calling runbooks. And each runbook basically corresponds to a process that you perform regularly, fairly regularly. So it could be something like setting up a new Office 365 account patching a server, or, I mean, any of the kinds of processes that MSPs are doing on a regular basis. Each runbook breaks that process down at a very granular level into a bunch of different steps, and then allows you basically to assign specific texts, or if you're a larger firm and you have a larger amount of text, you can assign it to a group of them, basically. So in doing that, basically, it's essentially documenting your processes. So we know there are great documentation solutions for managed services out there now that kind of help these guys capture the way they do things so that intellectual property doesn't walk out the door when some tech leaves for another company or retires or something. So there's a documentation component to this runbook thing. But they take it a step further from there. They sort of operationalize these workflows. Once you've spelled everything out and said who does what and in what order, the system sort of automatically makes sure that these things actually happen. So if I'm assigned the first step in the Office 365 rollout process, I get a message in my little dashboard in this system that tells me I need to do that. You know, the system's kind of watching me to make sure I get it done. It's going to remind me if I don't. Once I do it, the system is going to see, okay, who's next on the list? What's the next step? Who's that assigned to? And put something in their queue, basically. And so it's just behind the scenes. It's automatically making sure that everybody is doing what needs to get done in the right order. It's collecting reporting statistics. It's sending alerts to management if there's some sort of problem, you know, indicative of or that could lead to customer dissatisfaction, et cetera. So just a really interesting kind of system and an interesting, you know, complement to the RMM software that most MSPs obviously are already using. From BitTitan's standpoint, this is something that's going to help you use that RMM software more effectively. It's not a replacement for it.
I love that. Now, it does the step-by-step. It's the system that breaks this down. Like, you don't have to do any manual work in that. Is that the way this works? How does that work?
Well, it can work in one of two ways. So, and this is actually an important point about the solution, is that on the day they shipped it, it came with effectively 100 pre-written runbooks. So 100 of the most common managed services processes all sort of laid out for you. And you can obviously customize it, and almost everyone's going to want to do that. But, I mean, they've done the legwork for you on 100 processes, and they're going to have dozens more. Like, I mean, every month they're going to have a bunch of new processes that they add to the system, and, you know, no added cost, basically, to tap into those. So that's one way to do it, is you can kind of start from their template, essentially, and customize it. Or you can just define it completely on your own.
Okay.
So you can define manual forms.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, cool. So it can be a custom solution for just about anybody, then.
Yes.
It's not just these common, like, Office 365 mailbox migration and Azure security stuff. It's whatever you want it to be.
Exactly. And it's worth pointing out, it doesn't even have to be an external-facing managed service process. I mean, the BitTitan folks pointed out to me, if you want to set something up for billing runs or whatever, some internal process, you can do that too. It'll automate more or less any process that you set up in it.
I wonder if they would make one for magazine editors.
There you go.
We could really use one right about now.
Yeah, Matt and I, our dashboard would be flashing red.
Kidding, Cecilia would write on a script that makes my monitor pick up a giant hammer and hit me over the head.
That would be funny. one of those blow up mallets.
Donk, donk. Cool. Yeah, that's neat.
I like this.
This is a pretty cool solution. We'll put a link to this one on the show notes page if people want to go and read a little bit more about this. But yeah, if you're looking for automated, like, business processes of any way that does all this cool stuff, then this is one to look at. Pretty neat. HP's in the news, Rich. Now, it was just last week, we were talking about Xerox, right?
Yep.
They launched a whole bunch of printers, and then here comes HP. Now, I thought 29 printers was a lot.
Exactly.
You know, here comes HP, you know, 54 SKUs.
Na, 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 na.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, here we were saying, oh my goodness, 29 printers on one day, and just days later, HP comes out and says, ah, nothing. I think that's impressive.
All right, so what does HP have here, Rich? Anything interesting?
Well, this is sort of, I guess, the next step. So in September last year, HP made big news. They bought the printer business from Samsung. announced that they were going to, you know, make a serious push into the multifunction printer space and, you know, essentially try to disrupt the copier market. They were going to push MFPs into accounts, companies that are relying on copiers instead. And we all know that the lines distinguishing copiers from MFPs are getting fuzzier these days. So big strategic push on their part to grab a hunk of that $55 billion global copier market. And so this is a big kind of step in that process where they came out with, yep, count them, 54 A3 multifunction printers. They've got some interesting sort of onboard security technology. They clearly made a real emphasis on security with all these products. They've got, among other things, sort of runtime intrusion detection functionality. So, I mean, real kind of endpoint security functionality built into these systems. A range of different sort of print mechanisms, but some of the models, some of those 54 models have the end-to-end stationary print head on them that I think it was 2 weeks ago, Matt, that you and I on the show we did without Celia were talking about some similar products from Epson, color inkjet printers with the stationary head. So at HP, they call that technology PageWide. There are some PageWide models in this latest blast of printers, as well as some other technologies there. So yeah, they're pushing hard HP into this MFP space right now, and I know I spoke with a senior SMB executive at that company for an article that appeared in our print magazine a few months back, and she made it very clear to me, Stephanie Dinsmore, that you know, they're really going to be looking for their partners to help them push these products out to customers, and they seem to be reasonably satisfied with the uptake, the enthusiasm in their channel for all these new products they're putting together.
So, and in fact, we have a story coming out in the May issue that talks about the MFP market and how it really is starting to take over for all these different kinds of standalone units, copiers, scanners, etc. So that goes right along with this. It's playing right into their hands. So that's a cool thing. And I have a question for you, Rich, or Matt, You may know also. I had to go look it up today because I kept thinking to myself, what the heck is A3? I mean, in the olden days, you had your 8.5 by 11. You had, you know, a couple of different things that, you know, I didn't work for a huge operating unit or anything where we had all kinds of crazy machines. So tell me what size A3 is.
Do you want to feel that? I actually have a hunch you are more familiar with this than I am. Matt, based on our conversation a couple of weeks ago about the Epson printers, I remember thinking to myself, boy, he really knows the difference between A3 and A4.
Okay.
Go.
Well, A3 is a paper size.
Yep.
As is A4. I am trying to remember the exact...
And that's where I always kind of stumble.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
okay,
A3...
This is... Go ahead. You go first.
Well, I think A3 is the most basic paper size kind of format in terms of, you know, letter and I assume legal, and then it gets more sort of expansive from there.
Yeah, A3 is bigger in a different kind of way, more so for, I'm guessing, the people who do more design and art kind of things where they make brochures, and the paper is a very unusual size because most office paper is, you know, longer in one way and narrower in another. Well, this is a lot closer because the pages have to be folded and whatever into brochures. The A4 is larger than that, and if I'm not mistaken, that would fit like a spread layout on one sheet.
So, how about that? If you want the technical,
you
answer,
looked it up.
I did. I'm like,
stinker.
Well, it's
yeah, this yeah. Is I want to hear the technical thing because I don't know if people out there really understand the different sizes.
This is when people way overthink things. Like there are mathematical equations,
yes,
in order to define paper in an A series. So
it's
this is what nerds do when they have too much time on their hands and no hobbies. Just so you know, paper in the A series format has a square root of 2, roughly equal to 1.414 aspect ratio, rounded to the nearest millimeter. A0 is defined so that it has an area of 1 square meter before rounding. Successive paper sizes in the series A1, A2, A3 are defined by having the length of the preceding paper size so that the long side A, n plus 1, is the same length as the short side of AN before rounding.
Say that 3 times fast.
Yeah. And the letter paper size is not actually exactly within one of those, but yes, it basically says that it kind of gets longer as you go. It's like roughly 1 square meter, and then like A1 is longer, A2 is longer. There you go. This no one ever needs to know what any of this stuff really means,
except if you're. You know, if you need that paper.
Except if you need that paper size. So if you know you need A4 paper, buy an A4 printer. I think we can leave it.
No, that's not the answer.
No, that's not the answer?
Well, it depends. You have to read that story in the May issue.
Oh, okay. I love the teaser. I love the teaser. Mm-hmm. Leave it at that. So I have a much more pressing question, and that was actually a really cool segue, Cecilia. We should actually do a big write-up on... do we have a big write-up on these paper size types and differences and that kind of thing?
No.
Right, we should put that in the calendar. That's a cool article to do. Let's find somebody to write that.
You just like the square root part.
I love explaining complex things and pointing out how ridiculous something like this is. Like, why does it need to be this complex? But what I want to know is... I understand that there are different needs for different customers, right? But 54 SKUs? I mean, you think that's a little excessive?
Well, you would almost have to look at a breakdown of those different SKUs. From a buyer or a partner standpoint, maybe it's overwhelming. But I have a hunch they have it kind of broken out so that you can sort of... work your way down the chart. Yeah, So it's like, okay, do I want laser or page wide? Okay, I want laser. Well, do I want color or black and white?
Right. And then there's always this is this same printer. It's got a different SKU, but it's this same printer, but it's got the automatic document feed.
Right. Yeah, and exactly.
That kind of thing. So,
it's
but
a lot
yeah.
of SKUs, though.
But, it is a lot.
And, it's funny, Matt, that when you said that, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, wow, those HP partners are probably freaking out.
So, Rich, are we going to review every one of those 54 new SKUs?
Yeah, and matter of fact, you are. You
yeah,
are.
I
sent them your name and address. You're going to get 54 boxes at some point in the next week or two.
Great.
You're going to have to call all your friends just to get them in the garage.
I don't even know if I could fit 54 printers in here. That'd be a little nuts. Very cool. All right, let's move on to another one. So Autotask, they've got a new partner program. Cecilia, that's normally up in your, area of expertise, all the partner programs. So what do they got?
In fact, this was one that Rich did.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, yeah.
So this is a new Autotask partner program specifically around their endpoint backup solution. So as you may or may not recall, at their Autotask Community Live partner event, last September, The big news, the big bombshell announcement was that they Autotask was introducing a BDR solution. And so now, on the eve of their European community-wide partner event, which takes place in Amsterdam next week, they have announced that they're setting up a partner program specifically for that component of their solution portfolio. And two notable things about what you get with that partner program or features that are sort of connected to it. The first and I guess lesser of the two is that, you know, if you're in their partner program, you're going to have a dedicated account manager. They don't have, you know, some ground floor tier where you're dealing with, you know, email support or dialing into some pool. You will have a dedicated person supporting you. The bigger news, and I kind of buried the lead in this story as I'm looking at it now, is the fixed cost licensing model that members of this partner program are going to get, where basically you're going to be paying a predetermined fixed per device amount for every device you protect with the solution, as opposed to being charged based on the amount of data that you're protecting. That's how most BDR solutions work. That's how most BDR solutions or vendors charge for their solution. It's all, you know, consumption-based, which makes a lot of sense in terms of their business model. But it also, you know, it introduces some complexity for MSPs in terms of figuring out where to set prices, because you want to make sure you're making a profit, but it's hard to anticipate exactly how much capacity a given client is going to need. So from an MSP standpoint, it is enormously easier to really kind of lock in a consistent profit if you know in advance exactly what you're going to pay for every device that that you're protecting. And that is what Autotask says they're going to be doing.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's a big shift. I hope others follow that that model too. Because it would be a giant pain in the butt to anticipate what the consumption is going to be. And that can even fluctuate almost month to month, too. So a fixed cost is much, much simpler to anticipate and to bill for.
Now, I mean, the interesting thing here, I suppose it's worth praising them, but also just wondering how it's going to work out. So, I mean, essentially, the complexity of making those predictions has not disappeared. It's just that Autotask has taken it on itself, essentially. I mean, when they determined what those fixed prices are going to be, it was based on their own kind of consumption estimates. So they're sort of taking that burden over from the MSPs, but now we'll have to see how well or poorly they do that, you know?
They could have a mutiny.
One thing I don't know is, how far down the road, can you buy a 3-year contract? I don't know that kind of a thing, or their first window, when the first window to change the rates opens, and so on. Conceivably, if they did a poor job of setting prices, they could take a bath on this.
Now, I'm also wondering if they introduce this program to maybe give this BDR solution more legs. You know, like, do you have any sense of how well they're doing with it?
I don't. I don't know a whole bunch about that. I guess we'll know pretty soon. We should have an indication pretty soon the degree to which this partner program, and specifically the licensing change, starts affecting adoption. So I don't know where they're at right now. I'll be very interested to see, though. You got to believe this is going to accelerate adoption, but it'll be interesting to see how much.
Yeah. Yep.
Very cool. All right. Well, that seems like a good spot there to take a little bit of a break and let everyone catch their breath and have short daydreams of fixed device pricing models and taking baths with people at Autotask. Somehow you put that image in my head. I don't know how that happened.
And now it's in
Woo!
Mine too.
All right. So anyway, we'll be back. We got a couple videos to tell you about that we got out on the site, an interview, some stuff on digital signage, and lots more ahead. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, and we are back with part two of Channel Pro Weekly. So, guys, we got a couple videos up on the site because I know we started a couple new video series, and we talked about it in a past show, but I wanted to point out that these are still going on. So, Rich, do you want to tell us, or Cecilia, you want to tell us about just briefly about the videos that we have up and who's in them and where the people can go and watch them?
Yeah, so there are actually two different video series that we do, one of which is really still brand new. The other one kind of debuted, six-ish months ago, something like that. The older one is called 2-Minute Drill. Those appear on our website pretty much every Wednesday, and they feature a different vendor from the SMB channel community out there. Discussing some topic that is within their area of expertise. And so this week's video features Ted Roller of Mail Protector. The Mail Protector folks are, you know, all things email, basically, and email security in particular. And Ted has some interesting thoughts to share, basically, about the degree to which MSPs are really sort of getting everything they can get out of email. From Mail Protector's point of view, that there are additional revenue opportunities, email-related services that people can and should be providing, and they're either not aware of it or just not, you know, doing it yet. So that's the latest 2-Minute Drill. Like I said, you'll see another one from a different company every week. Keep an eye out for that. And then the new series, which just started a few weeks ago, is called 60-Second Guru. And of course, we at Channel Pro, we know all sorts of really smart, experienced consultants and experts who advise MSPs and VARs on, you know, optimizing their business practices and operations and pricing and service delivery and all that kind of good stuff. And we thought it would be great to just give one of those persons every week a chance to share a good, you know, concrete, actionable tip with people. So that those videos are going to appear pretty much every week on Tuesday, and this week's video features our good buddy Manuel Palachuk, who is talking about calculating your effective hourly rate. And I'll just sort of leave it at that. You should go watch the video. He'll tell you how to do it, why that particular metric is important, why you really kind of need to be focused on that if you want to make sure that you are actually earning the profit you think you are on your managed services.
Yeah, it's a good video. Man, he's always really fun to listen to too. So I hope he's going to do more for us because really like his videos. But I also noticed, Rich, that with every video series we seem to cut the time in half. So is the next video series going to be like 30-second flash?
Exactly.
It's a commercial for the 60-second.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
eventually
we'll get down to the 5-second WTHWT.
Yes.
Like the 5-second, what the heck was that?
I'm working my way down to the 1-second blip. Rich Freeman's weekly 1-second blip.
It could be just Carl the staring in front of at the Carl Palachuk staring at the camera going, "Money!" that'll be the 1-second blip.
Very affordable production costs, though.
Yeah, right. Really.
Yeah. Easy to host too.
Oh yeah,
I can host 1-second videos, no problem. Very cool. So those videos are up on the homepage right now, or up on the site. So if you're listening to this a little bit further down the road, we have a videos tab on the page. Just click that, and it'll help you find and browse all the different videos that we have to offer. So 2-Minute Drill and 60-Second Guru, go and check those out. Good little videos. And look forward to more of those. Great tips and stuff like that for all you all out there.
All y'all.
All y'all.
We all y'all.
Southern edition.
Yeah.
All y'alls. All y'alls, go look those videos. All y'alls. Right. Or something to that effect. Pardon me while I go and pour me up a glass of sweet tea and go and park my car in the front yard.
It's the coffee.
No, it's your sofa on your porch. Come on.
It's a sofa on the porch. No, isn't it like those old like Volkswagen Beetles that you like you rip the hood off of and you turn it into like a planter? You know, so it's like you have flowers growing out of the car. Don't make fun
everybody,
of that. I have family who
does that. Doesn't everybody do that?
I've got all my extended family is like all from. I mean, they're kind of all over the place, but I have a lot, you know, in the what would you say, country areas of like Kentucky and Tennessee and Missouri, and they all got car planters, and they work good. They have lovely flowers, I will just say. So, speaking of somebody who has a lot to talk about paying off with flowers and cars, because that really pays off and is good use of an old car. There's some digital signage systems that really pay off too, right?
Yes, Matt. Thank you for that really interesting intro to this
story. Horrifyingly terrible segue.
Oh, my God. Quit while you're ahead.
I probably should.
Okay, so we have a piece that just went online today called Custom Digital Signage Systems Pay Off. And as you can imagine from that headline, it's talking about how you can make money from digital signage. And this is this was kind of addressed to people on the hardware side, like system builders and others who dabble in hardware. And the point of this is that, you know, the money isn't in the hardware, but I think everybody knows that. And really, the point of this is that in order to really increase your bottom line from some digital signage solutions, you really have to look at the entire system, how it's designed, managing it, installing it, servicing, and providing content. Because that total package, system sale, is profitable. And you can all, and just like with all the other things, digital signage is no different than any other solution that you're providing, is that it's all about where you can add your own value and help your customer as much as possible, is that's how you're going to make additional money. So the important part isn't the hardware, but the application and the people you're selling it to. So with that said, there are service opportunities also beyond the sale. Why is that? We've been talking even on this podcast about people who want like the one-stop shop. They want to kind of set it and forget it. Well, digital signage is something that people also don't want to think about. They don't want to deal with it. So they just want results. So your value-added services that you can offer them after the whole thing is installed, that's where you're going to make your money.
So what kind of things would that be, though? Are we talking about like bundling in like management software, or are you talking about like a package to service displays? What are the kind of opportunities that we're thinking about?
Well, one of the guys said really focus on areas that the big box players don't cover, like loading the software, customizing the system, preventive maintenance and management, that kind of stuff. And then there's also the other side of it, which is more like maybe advertising or, you know, providing information like from a library kind of thing, you know, providing content. So there's a lot of different things. I think it also depends on who the customer is and what they're looking for. That should give you some ideas.
It's interesting, you know, listening to you talk about this. It's striking, in fact, how similar that conversation is to the cloud computing conversation, right? And I mean the margins for digital signage hardware and software are considerably better than the margins you can make on a software as a service solution. But I mean, it's a very similar story. If you really want to kind of build part of a business or an entire business around digital signage or cloud computing, where you really kind of need to focus your attention is in those more sophisticated kinds of services and functions that you can provide to turn, you know, a product into a solution, and that the big vendors, the Microsofts and the Amazons and so on, can't really do. So, I mean, you know, you can buy Office 365 directly from Microsoft, but for a partner, there's an opportunity there not just to implement it and migrate the data over and so on, but to kind of configure it and customize it and trick it out, basically, and turn it into a real solution. And that's where the margin is going to be.
Mm-hmm. So is the goal to start tacking on, like, monthly subscription fees to digital displays? Or maybe I'm a little lost on what the package is supposed to be, because I don't know if I see a lot of customers that would want to start paying like a monthly fee per digital display. Maybe there are. I don't know. Where is the profit potential here other than selling a pack like hardware and software?
And are you asking specifically on an ongoing basis? So, I mean, in terms of, for, you know, from a one-time project fee kind of basis, you sell the customer the hardware and the software, but then you're selling the services required to turn that hardware and software into something that's actually, you know, useful from a business standpoint, into a solution. But I'm less familiar with what the opportunities look like for ongoing management. I don't know if the article discussed that, Celia.
Not in depth, no.
But I mean, just, you know.
Well, one thing that they did bring up is that one of the angles that you can take with digital signage. Is controlling your controlling the hardware yourself, maybe with Linux software. And I don't really, I mean, that's like a little beyond my, that's beyond my ability to understand right at the moment. I don't really get that, but.
I was just trying to get a better sense on what custom meant, you know, like where the revenue potentials are. Is it in the, custom is in like the customized software setup and getting the client rather than just here's a bunch of displays, have at it, helping them with what is going to drive those displays. But that doesn't necessarily mean an ongoing, you know, recurring model for revenue. Right.
Right. Yeah. The recurring revenue opportunity here is not something I know a whole lot about. But yeah, in terms of, you know, the best margin opportunity on a digital signage solution, it's taking the customer past that first step you described. Here's the hardware and software you ordered, and having a real business conversation with them. So, you know, what are you trying to accomplish here, and who's your market, and what are the opportunities and challenges and so on, and let's figure out a way to utilize this in a way that's going to help you grow your business. And then do that work.
Well, you could always, yeah.
Sorry if I'm distracted here for a second. My cat is very angry with me because I won't let him on my lap. So he is taking to now digging his claws into my sweatshirt that I threw on the floor.
I thought you were going to say, he's now digging his claws into my leg.
Well, he was doing that earlier, but now he's decided to take it out on my green sweatshirt.
For people who are not aware of this, Matt's cat is almost as large as Matt.
just about.
That is the world's largest cat.
Yeah, we did. I put a picture of him in this ridiculous thing my kids put on him, like one of my daughter's sweatshirts. But yeah, okay. Now I think he's just gonna lay on it and hair all over it to get back at me. Oh, now he's giving me that look. Don't give me that look. Anyway. Let's move on to an interview, a cool interview. So, Rich, you talked to Adam, I'm going to butcher the name because that's what I do best, Atanasio.
I believe he pronounces it Atanasio.
That sounds right.
Okay. Yeah, so last week I was at an ASCII event in Orange County and ran into Adam Atanasio. Now, I don't know him well, but I mean, I have crossed paths with him a number of times at ASCII events and other conferences, and I know he worked for a while at Lenovo, and he was with ASI for a while. And I just assumed he still was actually with ASI, but it turns out he is working for a different company now, and it's a company I had never heard of before. And as he kind of told me a little bit about it and what they do, I thought, boy, that's kind of interesting. That's something our listeners probably should know about. The company is called Imagit, I-M-A-G-I-T, and they offer an interesting kind of temporary or remote staffing solution for MSPs, which is what Adam explained to me when I sat down with him to discuss the company.
So at Imagit, we are an MSP for MSPs, essentially. We have 400 engineers in North America. We also work in five other countries, but North America, we have 400 engineers. Allows for an MSP to grow outside of the space and the scope that they thought was imaginable. So sometimes an MSP will come across a piece of business or a contract that may have a location that's local to their office within their 20-mile or 50-mile radius that they normally work in. But that business may have 30 or 40 other locations throughout the country that they don't have engineers and resources to get out there and deploy and manage with. So we are able to come in and give them those engineers that are completely vetted in either on our contract or on their own contract and put those engineers out into the field so they can take on bigger projects and bigger cases. We've even had situations where a partner doesn't have the financial resources to take on a larger bid or a larger job like that, so they will actually have us go through the bid process for them and under our paper and under our name and hire them as a subcontractor, even though they brought the business to us, because we were able to expand out their business model by doing that and give them the financial backing to handle a large acquisition or a large procurement of hardware services. This can be anything from simple site surveys, all the way through to pulling cable, rack and stack, break fix, or even setting up 24/7 support contracts and rolling trucks out to job sites and SLA agreements for those partners.
So you will either work with an MSP on a one-off basis, they need somebody one time, one place,
yep,
or on more of a contractual kind of
basis? Absolutely, absolutely. And we can set up their contracts for them and help them manage those contracts for whether it's tier one, tier two phone support for a product or service that they deployed out in the field. We can provide that servicing for them. We also do a lot of business with the manufacturers themselves. So the manufacturers will have a partner that's working on a large project, and that partner goes to the manufacturer and says, hey, do you have resources to help us deploy these 35 switches or these 250 access points? And the manufacturer will contact us and say, we've got a partner that needs help getting a deployment done. We want to help them win the business as well. So we work really across both sides of that spectrum and can work with both the partner and the manufacturer and bring the two of them together and give them a much broader scope, and especially in North America.
Is there a typical profile of the kind of MSP you guys work with?
We work with MSPs across the board. I would say a lot on the side. A lot of the MSPs that have moved out of break fix but are still going in and doing deployment upgrades, like taking something from Windows 7 to Windows 10, and they want a tech on site where they might only have one or two techs and there's 15 locations and they need to be at. So we'll send techs out to those sites. We also work with much larger companies and much larger MSPs that are doing, you know, 1,000 sites, 1,500 sites, 6,000 site deployments as well. So we kind of cover everything from the little tiny MSP just getting out there and getting started, mom and pop, working with Joe's Tire Shop down the corner, all the way through to very, very large, you know, Cisco and Ruckus deployments and Regis office systems, things like that across the board.
Now, there are going to be some people listening now who are going to be thinking to themselves, do I really want to introduce these guys to my clients? What if, you know, they go direct with my customers or so on? How do you address that?
So, number one, we don't sell any hardware. We only provide bodies in the field. It doesn't do us any good to try to go around our customer because they are our customer. If we go around our customer, we lose our customer. It's our business model. We don't sell hardware services unless they want us to procure that hardware for them. If a manufacturer or a vendor comes to us and says, "Hey, I got a partner that's looking to do this deal," we'll only quote with that manufacturer's hardware because they're the one that brought us a piece of business. So our business is built on relationships, and it's about relationships. Even our engineers, our 400 engineers that we have, a good majority of them are W-2. Some of them are full-time 1099, and some of them are part-time 1099 engineers, but they are fully vetted. We have an engineer in Dubuque, Iowa. Well, he's a 1099 part-time engineer because there's only part-time engineering work in Dubuque, Iowa, but we have a reach into Dubuque, Iowa to handle that type of business. It doesn't do us any good to try to end route anybody because we're going to charge the same amount that we're going to charge, and we'd rather have our business come to us and people trust us and trust our engineers and trust our vetting process. We're helping them grow. That's our job.
How does the pricing work? How do you guys get paid?
So we're going to charge generally by hour for putting an engineer in the field, and that may be anywhere from $50 to $250 depending on the work that needs to be done. So whether that's something like pulling cable or bringing in a full CCNA to go in and configure their Cisco network across the board. So it just depends on the project. It's all project-based. It's all done on a quote or statement of work type of business. And, you know, when we get into doing things like help desk services, it's, you know, how many instances do they expect? We can help them find out how many instances to expect if they have never rolled out this type of product for themselves. So we can help them figure out what kind of SLA that they need to buy. And we can adjust, and we can set in, you know, we'll adjust every quarter or every 2 months while they're trying to figure out what that need is. So it really depends on the business.
How much lead time do you typically require?
Generally, our lead time's, you know, at least a few weeks, 6-8 weeks. However, I'm working on a very large project right now that my lead time was 4 days. You know, 4 days, we've already got the proposal in. 10 days later, we're going to be rolling trucks. We're going to be ready to go. So, again, if it's needed to rush, we can get the rush done. We like to have a little bit more time. There's less mistakes when you have a little bit more time. You have the opportunity to like weed out some of the problems that might come up on the job. But sometimes you're just under a time crunch.
Do you, especially when you're doing something like help desk services, do you white label?
You do. We will. We can work contracts and labeling in any way that is comfortable for the partner. We can go do a job on their paper, or we can subcontract them onto ours, whichever makes sense for the specific project that's needed. We've even had a couple of customers who had a longer-term 2-year contract that they had, and they had us buy out the remainder of their contract so that they could take it off their books that year and remove it. So it really just depends on what's needed for the specific instance.
How do you advise your MSP customers to think about your service in relation to a growth strategy, basically, as a tool, basically, for expanding their business?
Well, I asked them straight out, have you looked at a piece of business that you'd like to bid on and looked at your resources and realized that you would not have the capacity to bid on it? Bringing us in gives you the capacity to bid on that business. And every single MSP has had that one job, whether it's from a cousin or a brother that works for a large corporation that they had an in for, that they just didn't have the infrastructure to handle. That's what we're there to provide for them.
And, I mean, are there people who essentially rely on you as a more or less permanent extension of their staff, basically as an alternative to hiring more full-time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So because we take on those services, whether it's with the W-2 or the 1099s, we're going to be taking on all the accounting for those employees. We're going to be taking on all of the insurance, all the benefits, all the state regulations. You know, if you're an MSP in California and you need to pull on a contractor in Virginia, the state regulations in Virginia are very, very different than they are in California. Well, we cover all the states. We cover everywhere. So when we pull that in, we're going to be taking care of that whole piece of their business as well, so they don't have to stress about it. As they start to expand and they want to start hiring their own engineers out in that area, absolutely. Now they have some experience in that area, maybe have some business in that area, and can start bringing on their own and replacing our staff out over time.
And that was Adam Atanasio and Rich Freeman talking about Imagit and
Imagit,
some of their remote staffing services. So, Rich, very interesting idea and solution. I like the fact that it can be white labeled. I think that's pretty cool. What else? I'm trying to think. Like, this is not a side of like MSPs in the channel that I know a ton about. So I'll just say, where is the where's like the cool parts of this that maybe is unique that there aren't any other solutions around, or what makes this of interest to everyone?
So there are two things really about this service that I find really interesting, and I'm obviously still very new to the company, but pretty much every, I'm going to guess anyway, every MSP, every VAR out there has had the experience of talking to a customer who has a need of some kind, and you know, and let's say you're based in Chicago, and you have a customer in Chicago, and they've got a warehouse in St. Louis, and they need your help with the warehouse in St. Louis, you know, and you just have to say basically, well, I don't have people there, so I can't help you out. There are just a lot of cases where VARs and MSPs are sort of essentially forced to say no to a customer because they just don't have the remote resources to handle a job like that, even if it's a one-time kind of gig. So here, and just as an FYI, I mean, this came up ages ago when we were talking about the 20, managed services co-op that Tim Conkle runs. And, you know, one of the things that they like to talk about is if you're part of this cooperative network, and we have people located all over the country, if you're a Chicago guy and your customer has a facility in St. Louis, we can connect you with one of our partners in St. Louis, and you can say yes to that business. You don't have to say no. So Imagit is basically another way of dealing with that challenge of getting somebody you know, out of town who can handle some need for you and just kind of help you not have to say no to a client, not have to walk away from a piece of business because you just don't have, you know, a person in the right place or enough people or a particular skill that's required for a few days, etc. The other thing, so that's to me, that's sort of the obvious. I mean, that is their bread and butter. That's what they do is
right.
Supplement.
But just to interrupt for a second, though, I do know that, like, distributors offer a lot of services like that, too. So who's that I'm thinking of? Like Cynix, I know, for example, they have like a, you know, get somebody to go and do something for you kind of.
Yeah, service. Ingram Micro does it too.
Yep.
Yeah, I probably imagine most of them do.
Mm-hmm.
So how is what he's doing different than like what you would could get through a distributor?
Well, I mean, I guess the big question is going to be how big a company are you dealing with? How big a company are you comfortable dealing with? How much do you know about the people who are delivering the services for you? They can get very specific at Imagine about, you know, how they vet their techs. I was going to say employees. Not all of them are on a W-2, but the people who work with them, you know, they can be very specific with you in terms of who you're getting and what that person knows and what they've done and so on. So yeah, I mean, there are other options out there for handling that kind of challenge, but these guys might...
Well, you were going to go into another point, so I'll let you get into that. Maybe that'll differentiate it a little more in my head.
Okay. Well, I mean, the other possibility, which I didn't discuss as much with Adam, but just sort of intrigues me, is just this idea of if these guys have help on demand, essentially, and if they're as flexible as they make themselves out to be in terms of, you know, when you bring somebody on and how long you keep them on, you almost wonder if there's some kind of business model that you could almost build around that where instead of maybe hiring, you know, two new full-time techs, you stick with the two you already have, and for at least some period of time in your evolution, your growth arc, you're just bringing in people temporarily from a company like Imagit when you need them, and sort of managing your costs in that way. I don't know.
Well, no, that's it.
See, I thought about too for the company VAR staffing. That's kind of the same type of thing, and I don't know exactly how VAR staffing is different.
Yeah, and we talked about something similar. I think when I came back from that Cynix event, and I was talking about, like, you know, Cynix has this outsourced labor model where basically you can just be a one-person company and then just outsource all your labor through the distributor for installation and all that stuff that takes a lot of time. Like, you could have no employees and still run a very large business, right? It is a very interesting idea and interesting model.
And, you know, I was writing about managed print for an upcoming issue of the magazine recently. And, yeah, I was kind of learning about, talking about those kinds of, you know, distributor-led or vendor-led services where there are, in fact, out there. I mean, this is not, you know, theoretical. There are managed print providers out there who are doing lots and lots of business and supporting customers all over the place, and they have a, you know, very small staff. They just outsource all that that work to a distributor or a vendor or whoever.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you know, that could be another interesting interview or article, like comparing those two approaches to business, hiring staff versus just using a distributor or an Imagit or of our staffing kind of solution, and what the pros and cons to those two approaches are. Because I have to imagine there's ups and downs to both.
Yeah, and it really, a lot of it depends on what you're comfortable with. A lot of people do not feel comfortable doing the outsourcing thing because they, you know, they feel that they are the best ones to take care of their clients. And, you know, you really have to have a certain kind of business outlook and comfort level with doing a lot of that.
And, you know, there are differences, too, in terms of the kind of product or service that we're talking about, right? So, I mean, with managed print, that kind of model might be a lot more viable because you don't necessarily, if as a business owner, it doesn't necessarily bother you if a different person shows up with a fresh
right.
supply of toner, you know, every...
Right. Right.
Whereas you might feel a lot more comfortable having a relationship with the person who comes by to, you know, support your hardware and so on and having some consistency there. So there is that difference, too.
Yeah.
You know who delivers my toner?
No.
UPS.
Mr. Kitty?
Mr. Kitty. No, he would just lay on the boxes and scratch at them. Yeah, I see you down there on my sweatshirt getting all your hair all over it. Anyway, that's a good good time. Very interesting interview, by the way. It's a very fascinating topic, and I'm sure we will explore that topic more as we go. But I think we're going to take a little break. We come back, we're going to hit our end of the show kind of regular features. We're going to check in on Mr. Joel. Got an interesting museum and tech pick for you guys this week, and Rich will put on his little gypsy costume, and you know, stare, get his crystal ball out, and wave his hands in the air, and look like he's predicting something. It's a pretty cool picture. We'll try to get it for you. So stick around. We'll be right back. And we are back with segment three, the last and final segment, our end of the show roundup of kind of regular features we do. So as you all know, we do not generally follow Mr. Kitty around my office and talk about what he's laying on at any particular moment. But we do follow our associate publisher, Joel Zaidspinner, around the country as he goes to various events and lives in airplanes and hotels and, rarely goes home. Although, you know, he goes home on occasion. You know, we had a little break there where he wasn't anywhere very interesting, but we do know he's out on the road and he's got a heck of a schedule, at least I know for the next several weeks. Almost probably all the way through into May into our next event. So this week, where's Joel?
Well, he has been this week at the ISC West show in Las Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
Yeah.
What happens in Vegas gets published on Facebook. Oh, wait, that's not how that expression goes. Anyway,
but
no. So why are we at ISC? What's going on there?
So ISC is a conference that targets the mostly the physical security space. So video surveillance systems, alarm systems, door access systems, that kind of a thing. I know very little about this show. I just know that this is a big show in that market. But, you know, we talk so much on this podcast about channel convergence. There is some channel convergence happening between the physical security world and the IT security world. And, in fact, there's sort of an event within an event at ISC West this year called the Connected Security Expo, which is, like, specifically about that, the overlap in these markets. And so that is why our good friend Joel was there this week, and our boss Michael Siggins was there as well. They were just kind of checking out the territory there and seeing who was around and seeing if there are opportunities for us to maybe learn more about this market and talk about it more with our readers.
Yeah, cool. So physical security hardware and solutions, but not like people solutions. Like, you know, a physical security solution could be like a very large bald-headed bouncer guy, but they don't show those off at this show, right?
No, they have them at the door.
Oh, okay. And you can get them hourly through VAR staffing, probably, I would assume.
Yeah. No, actually, I made a mistake on VAR staffing. They find you permanent people. They find you employees.
That was my understanding.
Yeah.
Although there are services out there like that. But yeah, the specialty certainly at VAR staffing is helping you fill open positions.
So who was I thinking of? There was another company. Todd Ballard?
Well, that is VAR staffing.
That's VAR staffing. Yeah, that's okay. Staffing. There's somebody else. It'll come to me.
It will come
night.
To us.
In the night. Sorry.
She'll fire up her microphone and start screaming at it, "I remember who it is!" Sometime overnight tonight. So, let's talk museums. So, guys, in the show notes there, I put a picture there for you to look at. And for all of you listening at home, if you want to go to our Matt's gallery picks thing, so go to the show notes page for pretty much any of our podcasts and click the link, and it'll take you to our gallery where there's all of the hardware picks, museum picks that I've done. And I'm sorry for those who went to go look at the VCR Plus thing last week. I got distracted and I completely forgot to post the picture. So that is up there now. So if you wanted to go back and take a look at that, everything is in the gallery as of right now, and I'll make sure this gets in there tomorrow. So, guys, what do you think that is?
A router?
It is a router. Yeah, it is a travel router. So that is the Netgear WGR-101 travel router. Now, I used to tote that thing around with me everywhere I went, like on every trip for a long time. So why do you think a travel router would be useful?
Well, I mean, can we get clues in the form of how old this thing is?
That one is pretty old. I think I've had that for maybe 10 years.
So you can connect wirelessly to VPN or...
Not exactly. So the primary use case that I had, and this has changed a little bit, and I don't really bring a travel router with me when I travel anymore. But I used to, probably up until about 2 years ago, and sometimes I do, depending on whether or not I think I'm going to like an old, outdated hotel or something. But if you remember how you used to get hotel or internet in a place like a hotel, there would be like a cable on the desk, right?
Yes.
And you'd plug the cable into the desk. And then you could, like, use your computer and you could pay to get on the internet. Well, but back in the day, you know, you'd pay for, like, that one thing. But if you had, like a phone, you wouldn't be able to, like, connect to Wi-Fi because most hotels didn't have Wi-Fi back then. Or if they did, you'd end up having to pay for access for the computer and for the phone. So what this device allowed you to do, and it was really handy when I went to places that didn't have Wi-Fi way back in the day, is rather than plug your laptop into the cable, what you would do is you would plug this travel router into the cable and then authenticate your purchase of internet at the hotel through the router. So the MAC address for the router is what would be authorized by their internet hotel service, right? And then it would create a wireless network for you that your laptop and phone and any other device that you wanted to bring with you could connect to. So you could have one payment, if you will, and then service all of your devices. I also use, you know, if I had like coworkers next door or family next door, it would also create a network so we'd just buy it once for like the whole group and they would all connect to my wireless router that way. And it's also very, very useful if you have a device that normally you would have no way to connect to a hotel service. So a lot of people like to bring like their Chromecast or like a Fire Stick or an Xbox 360 or whatever, but those don't have like web browsers that you can like go through the whole authentication thing. So something like this allows you to get hotel internet and then literally connect to any Wi-Fi device that you want with it. And I say hotel or any network where you want to create your own personal wireless network behind this other network. And I'll tell you another reason why I used to carry this around, especially early on in the day, is that Wi-Fi at hotels, especially in the early days, it was not a very secure browsing solution. Like I had been at hotels where it was an open hotspot, and you could kind of see everybody's, you know, stuff on the network, right? If people were sharing folders, you could go and poke around people's folders, you know. So it was a good way to. Now, most hotels, like, that is not the way it works anymore, but back in the day, it was very useful for like creating your own isolated network environment that kept everybody out of your stuff, and so on and so forth. Pretty cool, huh?
It is pretty cool. Give me a sense of scale on this. Like, how long is that thing?
That is, well, let's see. It is
7 by 5.
I don't know. It's smaller than my, it's a little thicker than my phone, but it's smaller than my phone.
Okay. Ooh. So quite compact.
Yeah, it is. For a router, for a little wireless router, yeah. Even for the day, it is a very compact unit. It was a neat one. So that kind of moves into my tech pick, which is a similar one. So most people who travel these days generally won't have a need for something like that anymore, unless, again, you're bringing some kind of device that you can't hook up into like a Wi-Fi system at a hotel and use like a Chromecast or a game console or whatever. So they still do make wireless travel routers. Because there are still those needs. Now, the one that I have is very old. That's like wireless G and, you know, so on and so forth. Although it's still functional, it still works. But the new ones are like wireless N. But I found a cool one that, if this is a functionality that you think would be useful to you, I found an awesome one for you to consider. So my tech pick this week is the TP-Link TLMR3020. I'll put a link to this on the show notes. This is an even more compact travel router that has a couple really cool features that, like, mine doesn't have, which make it super cool. One, this one can be powered, like, mine has to, like, plug into an outlet, but this one can be powered by, like, your cell phone charger or, like, plug in the USB port in, like, a notebook, and that's enough to power the unit. But the really cool feature with this one is that you can buy, like, a 3G modem, like a 3G or 4G modem from, like, your cellular carrier, and you can plug that little USB cellular modem right into the router, and then it can manage a connection and use that cellular modem, and you can essentially create a wireless internet hotspot wherever you are. Now, some phones have that functionality, but a lot of people don't get that functionality through phones, or sometimes the number of devices you can connect to a phone is very limited. Where this is, you know, this can be whatever. So it's something that can be shared among lots of devices, and it even has like WAN failover. So if you have it connected to like a WAN network, it will fail over if cellular is not available, and vice versa. So pretty nifty little travel router in that case.
And it's tiny.
Yeah, it looks
very small.
I'm looking at the specs, and very, very roughly, it's 3 inches by 2.5 inches by 1 inch. I mean, it's tiny.
Yeah, mine is much. My old one is much larger than that. Like, it has its own little carrying case and pouch because you have to bring the power brick with it. Where this one, yeah, super small. So if you have that kind of need, that's a pretty cool feature. And there's different modes on it too. So like, it can be like a just a travel router, like how I'd use mine. It can be a WISP client. So if you're in an area that has like a wireless internet service provider. It can interface with that and then create a network for you from that as well. And lots of other like neat features. So if that, so I also have one more tech pick to kind of go along with it. So if that doesn't interest you in the whole cellular connectivity part of this, and you just want a really small travel router, kind of like what I have, but one that's just newer and that has more features, CheapLink also makes one called the WR802N. And that one has, it's actually a 5-in-1 mode. So it can be a router, it can be a repeater, it can be a client, it can be an access point, and it has a hotspot mode. So it does a lot of cool stuff, very functional. And something like that could be very, very handy for travel use. And it's not that expensive. So check that out, the TLMR3020 and the TLWR802N from TP-Link. That is my museum and tech pick of the week.
Well, Rich, now we know what to get Matt for Christmas.
That's right. Little did we realize, actually, this whole segment, basically.
Yeah.
Is just...
this is my Christmas wish list?
Yeah. Yeah. Playing out slowly over the course of the year.
Well, we can replace his 10-year-old, too large, small router with a really good-sized small router.
Absolutely.
Well, I will point this out. This isn't just a personal interest. There, a small, tiny router like this that can be powered from just about anything is a pretty cool backup solution, or even you could build that into, you know, resellers out there can build that into solutions that if they need, for example, they're setting up a remote display somewhere weird, this could be the solution that brings, you know, internet or makes that display manageable. So you put this little teeny tiny router with it with a 3G cellular modem, and then that is how you could access this remote display in an RMM solution, for example. So there's a lot of cool reasons, a lot of cool things you can think about with these kinds of little travel router device kind of things, other than the fact that they're really cool. But I bet you didn't think of that, did you?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah, it's well. I'll let it go. I was just going to say because listening to you talk about that, it reminds me of the Datto networking product that came out a while back, and I mean that has 4G cellular connectivity as a backup. You know, it fails over to 4G basically if the main network connection goes down. It's almost like the reverse of what the TP-Link. You know, the TP-Link will fail over to the wide area network if the cellular connection goes down.
Yeah, I believe that's reversible, though, too, in the settings. I think you can have it primarily on WAN and have it fail over to cellular instead. Don't quote me on that, but when I was poking through the manual on this, I believe I saw that as a setting. Or at least I think I did. But it was late when I was looking at it, so it could have just been my brain playing tricks on me. But very cool, and, you know, another device that you can... think about when you need to put together a solution. You have this weird remote odd, or even if you're just your guys are on the road and they want to be able to quick make a hotspot for a bunch of devices. This is a pretty cool thing. All right, so Rich, Seer of Seers, you have your fortune teller costume on with the big purple hat that sticks up real high and the feathers everywhere and the crystal ball.
7 days a week.
7 days a week. This is like what you wear around the house, right?
Absolutely.
Like, are you like Johnny Carson? Do you like put like news stories to your head in an envelope and try to guess what they are?
Yeah. Oh, Karnak. Nope. I I try to be a little bit more original than that. I have my own shtick, I guess.
You have your own shtick. Well, I do know that as part of your shtick, you predict the past with uncanny accuracy. When you round up what has been, and you're pretty good at telling us what will be. So, Rich, please tell us what has been and what will be.
Yeah, and on what has been my accuracy rate is phenomenal.
It is really good.
So every Friday on our channelpronetwork.com webpage, you will find my In Case You Missed It post, which wraps up a bunch of news from the week that was. This week we'll be looking at some announcements that came out of the aforementioned ISC West conference and the Hosting Con show. There's a newly enhanced SKU of Office 365 that we didn't really get around to writing about this week on the website. Plus, the return of the Fanny Pack, updated for the age of mobility, and a new app that more or less tells you what to name your newborn. Now, every Monday morning, first thing, my What's Up This Week post appears on channelpronetwork.com and sort of previews the week ahead for the SMB channel. And this coming week, that includes the release of Windows 10 Creators Update, the EOL date for Windows Vista, the Channel Partners Conference in Las Vegas. Hint, hint, I have a hunch our good buddy Joel might be there, I'm not sure. And then in honor of the new baseball season, we will discuss the return of Jackie Robinson Day and the significance of his uniform number 47.
So if the app is the most popular name, Kitty McChildface?
You know, it could be for you. It could be for you. My understanding is it utilizes the very latest thinking in cognitive psychology. It tries to understand you a little bit and guide you towards the answer that it knows you want to make, but that you are not quite ready to pull the trigger on.
So in other words, my child will be named something like TL-WR802A.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You mean he's not already?
No, they have normal names. I guess I should have assigned model numbers. That would have been much, much easier.
Oh, that would have been hilarious. Oh, you could just go with thing one and thing two.
kid one, kid two. Yeah. Oh, model numbers for kids. That is
great.
Yeah. What a way. You could inventory them a lot easier. You know, it wouldn't be any of this like double name confusion.
Are they under warranty, your kids?
The warranty's expired, and I know we're past the return policy too. Can't take them back to like Babies R Us anymore because they're not, you know, babies anymore. So yeah, cool. And you, Rich, you baseball. Are the Cubs the lovable losers still or not?
Well, how can you refer to them as losers? The world champion Chicago Cubs.
I know. And this is going to be a weird year for around the Chicago area because, what if they start losing? Are people not going to go to games anymore?
I have a hunch they're going to be pretty good again. Now, I don't know. Did they start the season? Well, they must have started the season at home. So they've raised the banner already?
I believe the banner is up.
Okay. Yeah. That alone will be a hugely unfamiliar experience.
I know, but I mean, I think they're going to do pretty good this year. But if normally in years past, it doesn't matter how well they were doing. People would still go to games. But now if we get to late in the season and they're way out of first and, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs, are people going to not go? Are they going to be subject to the rise and fall of interest of other teams now that they have finally won?
They have changed expectations now. So yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. This is going to be weird. I don't know how people around here are going to deal with. This is that's my home area team here. So I'm very nervous about this going forward. So we'll just have to see how it goes. Hopefully they just win the World Series again because, you know, this year is their year. Or was this last year? Oh, I don't know. You see my problem with this. Anyway, all right. So we do Channel Pro Weekly. Guess how often, Rich?
Every 5 business days?
Every week. We do one weekly. Can you believe that? Now, there was a time, I know, Channel Pro Weekly wasn't really weekly, but it is weekly, and it has been for several shows now, and it will be in the future. Channel Pro Weekly, usually every Friday, sometimes Saturday, depending on when we get to record. Because sometimes we record on Thursday, sometimes we have to record on Friday if we're busy. But you will get a show every week, bar none. So it's exciting. It's great. Please subscribe if you have not. You can subscribe on iTunes. We are there. If you're there, you know, leave a nice rating and a good comment. Help some other fine folks find our show. Tell some of your friends and colleagues to listen in to Channel Pro Weekly for good information and notable entertainment value. And if anything, you can all make fun of the crazy things that I say every week. You'd be like, dude, did you hear what Matt said? That was like the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You know, but you can have, you know, it's a good water cooler talk, right? Bond with your colleagues. So we are there. We're also on Google Play, so you can find us there. We're on Stitcher. If you just have a podcast app that you just throw an RSS feed into, it's channelpronetwork.com/RSS/CPW. Throw that in there, and our shows will come down to you from the digital heavens each and every week. Please help us get over 1,000 likes on Facebook. We're almost there. So go to Facebook, type in Channel Pro Network, find our page, and like us there and interact with us. You can send us messages. We'll message you back. We could be like buddies if you want to be.
Aw.
Everybody needs a new buddy.
True.
And we're also on the Twitters. We are at Channel Pro SMB on Twitter. So follow us there. I am at Matt Whitluck on Twitter if you want to follow me. Cecilia, you are?
At Seal Gal.
She's at Seal Gal. And Rich, you are?
At Rich Free.
Yeah, so you can follow the three of us. And, you know, we won't think it's like a stalking thing. It's like it's weird or anything. Just follow us. It's okay. We think it's all right. And if you have any comments, you know, hit us up on any of those social outlets. But if you just want to send us a good old email, you can email us at podcast@channelpronetwork.com. And, you know, we'll read it here on the show if we get some feedback or something that you want to say to the channel or all the listeners out there, to your fellow peer listener cohorts. Communicate through me. I will be a vessel for your voice. Or just write something crazy and ridiculous you want me to say, and I'll say it. I'll do it, man. I will do it. I'll say it. I don't care what it is. Well, within reason. or I'll make Cecilia say it. If it's something that I'm uncomfortable saying, I'll make Cecilia say it. Yeah, so do that. So that wraps up episode 39. So the big 4-0 coming up next week. And what are we going to talk about then? You'll just have to tune in to find out. See you all next week.